On this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, I sit down with Taylor Lote to uncover value-add multifamily for passive wealth creation.
Hey Mavericks, this is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them with an unyielding belief that things can and must be better. They achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, where we provide actionable steps for you to grow your passive income and become job optional. During this episode, you're going to get to uncover value-add multifamily investing for passive wealth creation. For those of you who are new, I'm your host, Neil Timmons. I love passive income from real estate. Now, before I introduce you to today's Maverick, I want to make a request that at any point, like what you're hearing, give us a thumbs up and be sure to subscribe to the show. Never miss a valuable episode. And if you love what you hear, well, give us a written review. Then be certain to look at the description of this episode. We packed it with thousands of dollars in free resources. Now, today we've got the privilege to learn from a person who has been involved in over $250 million in commercial real estate transactions. Prior to his career in real estate, he was heavily focused on investing in the stock market. Ultimately, all of it changed when he had an epiphany about wealth creation and his ability to add and force appreciation. Now, I would describe today's Maverick as someone who's passionate about finding unique and interesting ways to force appreciation and create value for passive income investors. Today's Mavericks, Taylor Lote's here with me. Taylor, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here. Say, for the audience's sake, who are you? What do you do? Where are you from?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity. So I'm a multifamily and self-storage real estate investor. Got my start in the real estate space right around 2016. I wanted to pivot from Wall Street type of investing to real estate because kind of got fed up with the roller coaster ride of Wall Street investing. I'd done it for a few years. I was really good with my personal finances, not to toot my own horn, and it had been going well, but every day, every week felt like I was financially with my investments, walking blindfolded and not sure whether the next step was going to be off a cliff or up a staircase. And I just hated that feeling. So looked for real estate and here we are 2023 and consistently doing multifamily deals and took a while to get started. Although looking back goes faster than you might think, but staying consistent. And I'm personally based in Richmond, Virginia. We do deals pretty well spread out throughout the country, a lot in the Sun Belt, a little bit in Michigan has been pretty good to us. So yeah, that's a little bit about me and you know what we're doing.
Tell me about your very first commercial property you bought.
Sure. So the first deal that I invested in was actually as a passive investor. So that might be relevant to some of the audience. Yeah. I had my eyes on getting into the active side of larger multifamily deals, but I didn't know how to get in, right? It's such an opaque market. And, you know, this was back years ago before all this information was available. There were podcasts, but nothing like what it is today. It makes me feel a little old and dated to say that, but times have changed. And I met a sponsor at a real estate syndication event. It was actually a Real Estate Guy's Secrets of Successful Syndication event. And I was looking for an opportunity to invest in. Really, I was looking to get on the active side, but I thought foot in the door, become a passive investor because I had capital and I had learned and researched about evaluating sponsors and deals. So I felt comfortable with my ability to evaluate them. So this was a while ago now. It's tough to remember some of this stuff, but it was two apartment complexes in Atlanta, Georgia. And we held them for a few years and there were some really interesting lessons that came out of that and bumps in the road, if you will, which we can definitely go over if you like.
Bring me current and then I'm going to come back because we will go over it. But I just, for the audience's sake, I want to draw a contrast from where you started to where you're at today. Tell me about one of the most recent deals you've done.
Sure. So lately we're doing deals really spread throughout the country. We're doing quite a lot in Dallas and Houston, Texas, very popular state for investing. My first deal was actually on the active side. I was actually in Amarillo, Texas, up in the panhandle, but that went well, but I'm happy to be in more major markets. We're also doing deals in certain parts of Florida, Orlando, outside of Tampa. Last year, we did quite a bit in Phoenix. Things have slowed down a little bit there, but I think we'll see more as the market kind of gets used to these higher interest rates that we're seeing now. So more recently, earlier this year, we did a deal in Dallas. It's 328 units. And you know, my role in these deals is working with passive investors, working with the operators, and raising capital. That's my specific fit in this niche. And I arrived at that after a few years and a few times being in the operator seat myself. And even though those things went well, I just found a few things. I found that one, there were better operators out there than me that are doing, frankly, better deals that if I found a way to work with them, then everybody, I think it would work out better for everybody, work out better for the operators, work out better for the investors, because they would get the top of the line people actually doing the day-to-day management of the deal, if you will. And naturally, it works out better for my business because then we get to specialize in an area of the real estate syndication space that, frankly, I really love. I love working with investors. I love looking at deals. I love evaluating operators and being able to efficiently and effectively spread ourselves across the country with the model. It's really everything that I had wanted to create. Even though at the beginning I didn't, back in 2016, know that I wanted my business to look like this,
right?
I'm very glad that it does.
So you told me one of the most recent ones you've done, I mean, a big 342 units, a lot of units. And you shared with us the first one that you did. What's in between? What are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned along the way? Mistakes you made and would have changed, or mistakes you avoided along the way?
Yeah. So let's see, there are quite a few there. So in the middle there were those deals where I was in the operator seat working on sourcing the deal and helping manage a deal. And obviously everybody's expected to raise capital when you're doing an apartment deal, but that's not your central role. You know, asset management's involved, a lot of things to it, a lot of moving parts. And again, the deals went well, but my mistake that I was making, not knowing it at the time, was not specializing in one area or one aspect of the business that I really love and which doesn't feel like work. And what I mean by that is there are so many hats and so many seats that need to be filled in a real estate syndication, especially a big multifamily deal. Just to name a few, there's broker relations, right? The brokers handle most 80 to 90% of the large multifamily deals in any given market, if not more, are handled by a couple of brokers in an area. There's underwriting, which is just sitting in front of Excel a lot. There's asset management, which is essentially managing your property manager. There's more to it than that. And then, of course, there's capital raising, which I always wanted to do, I think, but I always enjoyed, I think is a more accurate way to put it. But you can't just go and raise capital without having the proper legal structures in place and, being able to do it. Years ago, it seems to have died down a little bit in more recent years, but when I was kind of coming up in the business, there were a lot of folks that were just kind of disregarding all of the securities laws and everything. Yeah. And sure, they were hiring a securities attorney, but, behind the closed doors, they were breaking as many rules as they could get away with for at least a little while. And I think the SEC took some actions and that kind of went away. But yeah, making those early mistakes and not specializing in an area that really charges me up, held me back from being able to scale and do more deals. And I think for me, the only way to really learn that and see that was to get into it and see that I wasn't making the progress that I wanted to make, seeing that we weren't doing as many deals as I wanted to do or that I needed to do to continue to scale my personal investments and continue to scale the business. So just came down to staying consistent, networking. You know, I host my own podcast. I've learned more by hosting my own podcast and interviewing people than I have probably anywhere else, probably second to doing deals, but it's a pretty close second. So yeah, there were a couple deals in there in the middle, but I found the right opportunity to focus on working with operators and raising capital and chose to pursue it a few years ago.
You focus primarily on two asset classes, apartments and self-storage. So maybe talk to me on any apartment side of things. When you see operators that you connect with who get it really, really right, what types of things have they done to make sure they actually have success? And you know what comes to mind, or maybe when you've seen, maybe not firsthand from you and your own investments and your investors' investments, but maybe when you see other people in the marketplace, where do they get it wrong? And value add multifamily comes to mind, of course, when executing, there's a business plan there. It's not as easy as set it and forget it. You've got some moving pieces there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so much to it. There are a lot of things that can go right, but there are even more things that can go wrong in a value add multifamily deal. I think one of the biggest ones that I've seen folks make, and fortunately, I feel I haven't made this mistake, but it's only through observing others making this mistake and networking, is thinking that you can move the line, quote unquote. You can buy property that's just over the kind of imaginary invisible line of the quality of a neighborhood, if you will, or over the neighborhood transition, and think, hey, I can fix this property up and move the line out a little bit and realize some higher rents. And it's certainly possible, but in this market cycle that is shifting now with higher interest rates, but as the market was getting tighter over the late 20 teens and especially a little bit into COVID, folks were getting into new cities, getting into new markets that they didn't have a firsthand knowledge and firsthand experience of. And even though they were experienced in their own areas, they started focusing too much on just the numbers on the page and what the broker, for example, was telling them about the property and what they could achieve. But they seem to have forgotten the tenant experience of actually being at the property, driving through it, or the kind of intangible factors that are relevant to any piece of real estate, right? You can't change the properties around you. Sure, you can change your own property. That can be very expensive, but a lot of operators got stuck thinking that they could just jump into a new market that they didn't really understand, just buy something that looked cheap and force value into it and move the line and realize value in that way. And it's possible to move the line. You can do it, but getting into a new market without that firsthand knowledge caused a lot of people to trick themselves into thinking that they could just bank on that play, buying slightly over the line, fixing something up and moving the line outward. That makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. From a passive investor's perspective, when they're evaluating a deal and a sponsor, what types of things could they be asking? How do they get to uncover that to make sure they don't go into a deal with a sponsor who's pushing that?
That's a great question. And I would say first, there's no foolproof strategy, right? If we could mitigate risk in any deal, then that'd be great, but it's not possible. It's just not a reasonable goal. So our goal is to ask the right questions so we can understand what we're getting into and hopefully mitigate those risks, but realize that investments always carry risk. Of course, anybody who tell you otherwise is doing you a disservice. So I think a few things that you can focus on is when an operator is getting into a new market, particularly a new market where none of their partners live, so they don't have that kind of firsthand knowledge of not just the city, but the local neighborhoods. It's labor intensive for them to get to the market, to explore it and get to know it. And many of them might hold back on making that investment. That, I think, adds additional risk because they're kind of banking on, or they pretty much are exclusively banking on, things that they see on, whether it's the broker's pro forma or their own underwriting, or they go on apartments.com and they see what properties are renting for that look kind of similar, but if you're not there looking at the property, looking at the neighborhood, seeing the vibe, for lack of a better term, and seeing if these properties really are comparable, then you don't really know if you can, say, get that $300 a month rent premium. So if they're getting into a new market, none of the partners live there, if the property management also doesn't have properties in that market, so they don't bring that firsthand market knowledge, I consider those like several stacking risk factors. And again, as the market got tougher over the late 20-teens and maybe a little bit more recently, interest rates are holding that back a little bit. The market just got tight in the late 20-teens. We saw folks jumping into new markets. Many of them did get saved by the basically free money through COVID, which was good to them. But those principles still remain that we need to understand fundamentally. It comes down to understanding our tenants' experience. And part of that experience is, what is this neighborhood like? What are my other options? What's nearby? All those questions. Without being there, it's really hard to evaluate those factors.
Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever-changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com. What's your investment philosophy? So when you're, by that, I mean, when you're evaluating a deal, what are you looking for? Of all the opportunities that exist, what makes it a deal?
Great question. So there are a ton of factors to look at, of course, right? There, I wouldn't say there's one that we need to focus on, but I like to see that really everything is in line. So I like to see that the debt is in line with the business plan, for example. And this is something that a lot of folks are expecting distress in the market later this year. In 2022, 2021, there were a lot of operators doing deals and only buying, say, one-year interest rate caps, but their business plan was a 3 to 5 year business plan. And they didn't necessarily expect that rate caps would be much more expensive than they are today. Rates would be much higher than they used to be. But still, that meant that their debt was not fundamentally in line with their business plan. Now, that's not to say that variable rate debt is always bad. We certainly have done plenty of variable rate deals, but you know, have a longer interest rate cap that's more in line with how long you intend to hold the deal, right? That's a big one. I like to see strong debt service coverage. Of course, lenders are always going to look like that, but look at that figure, DSCR. But if we can exceed the lender's minimum of usually 1.25, somewhere around there, then that's so much for the better, right? Because debt is really one of our biggest risks and certainly one of our biggest, if not our biggest, cost in real estate investing. So if we can mitigate that by having sufficient cash flow to cover that debt service or cover that risk, I really like to see that. I love strong value add potential. So if we can find a property that has the opportunity to raise rents, certainly like that. We need to fix it up. We're not expecting to get something for nothing. But then the question remains, okay, what are we doing to reconfigure the property or reconfigure the units so that people will be willing to pay more for our renovated units? And why are the current owners not doing that? So we need to answer those questions and understand why. And that's a little more, it's a quantitative factor when we look at the actual rents and our, you know, return expectations, all those calculations. But then it's a more qualitative factor in, again, asking about what the tenant experience is going to be and why they might be willing, again, to pay maybe a few hundred bucks more a month to live in this particular property. We haven't touched on, or at least we haven't mentioned, operator experience. How many deals have they gone full cycle on? That's a huge question, right? We've had a big groundswell of younger folks getting into, and not even necessarily younger folks, but newer investors getting into the industry over the years, myself included. I started in the 20-teens. I'm certainly not a gray hair, but how have those folks added experience to their teams? Have they been successful in the deals that they've done? Do they have a real world experience with these deals? All key questions to be asking.
Apartments and self-storage, what drew you to those two asset classes as opposed to all the other asset classes that exist?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it's no secret that there are a ton of potential investment options in real estate investing. And truthfully, that's one of the things that one of the mistakes that I made early on that kind of slowed me down is this shiny object syndrome, thinking about too many different asset classes and trying to chase the next thing, because it does take a little while, and no matter what you're doing, to start getting some traction if you want to do deals. So a little bit of a mistake for me early on was bouncing between several different asset classes, thinking about apartments and then self-storage and then mobile home parks. Now we have a few others, there's land and all kinds of other things. Mm-hmm. So getting some focus has really helped. But as far as the factors that attracted me to both apartments and self-storage, so apartments are here to stay, right? And that's a huge factor for me for any investment. I want to invest in scarcity, right? And so you could look at the crypto craze of 2021 and 2022. There's a potentially infinite supply of those, right? It was only a matter of time till all those NFTs, everything like that, blew up. But when it comes to investing in scarcity, most cities, most major metropolitan areas are quite short on the amount of housing that they currently have compared to their population. And looking forward, that doesn't really seem to be changing. So I love looking for that scarcity. Both apartments and self-storage are valued based on net operating income, which was a huge factor for me as well, because remember rewinding back to my early investing experience, focusing on Wall Street investments. Yeah, you park your money and you kind of wait for the market to agree to a higher price on your investments and you hope that happens. But we have no ability to force value add in our Wall Street investments. Whereas in commercial real estate, like large multifamily or self-storage, if we raise the net operating income, we can force the value upward. And being able to take the reins of the value of our investments, that just really appealed to me so much. And you could say that, oh, all real estate investors do that to one extent or another. And I would say that's true. But if you're looking at, say, a single family property, those are valued based on comps, right? You're competing with sales comps. You're competing with owner occupants that might be interested in buying. And they're just a lot more kind of squishy factors to raising the value on single families. Certainly possible. There are certainly a lot of people out there who are doing that exact thing. I'm sure you know many of them. I certainly do. But to me, it just didn't get me excited. I don't know why. I was just looking for that excitement. So the ability to force value add, the investment in some form of scarcity, particularly in the case of apartments. Self-storage is interesting in the sense that Americans, we have a lot of junk and we love to keep our junk and we need mm-hmm. to put it somewhere. And we statistically tend to put it in self-storage properties, whether we're in a situation where it's an economic downturn, we need to downsize, or if we're moving from one place to another, it's really a business of transition. So that has appealed to me as well. Self-storage is also a very heavily still mom and pop driven yep. asset class throughout the country. So it has a good opportunity there to force value add that starts getting into the kind of the weeds of self-storage. But yeah, there's so many factors that make them both appealing from an investor standpoint.
I was like what you said about apartments, the stability associated with that. I'm reminded by Jeff Bezos. He's talked a lot about this. And certainly early on in Amazon days, you know, one of the things he was asked was relative to what they invest in, how they look internally. And some of this is relative to change. A lot of people talk about what's going to change over the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. And one of the questions he posed was the opposite of that. What isn't going to change? Well, and for some of that, as it relates to real estate, is people still need places to live. And a building that's been around for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, it has been proven for decades that there's stability there, that there's something there. And as it relates to Amazon, for them, it was low prices and fast delivery. Some period of time from now, somebody's still going to want the lowest price and the fastest delivery, right? And they can invest very heavily inside of Amazon. And so I like that as it relates to what you described, encountered that with crypto as the alternative to that in several cases, largely for the asset class as a whole, a total fad, in my opinion. And certainly as it relates to NFTs has been proven already. So I think that's great as it relates to the asset class. Let's do this. Oh, actually, tell me this, and then I want to move on to the final segment. What are you most excited about this year?
Great question. I've got a lot of things I'm excited about. On personal level, I got married just a few months ago. So it's Congrats. Been, thank you. It's been fun being married. You know, we've got a vacation with the family coming up here. I'm in the midst, kind of early stages of writing a book about multifamily investing and growing wealth. And it's tough to say I'm excited about this per se, because if it comes true, there will be suffering on someone's part. So I certainly don't want to say excited about, but interested to see what happens with the pending loan maturities that the commercial real estate space is going to see in Q3 and Q4 of this year. There have been a ton of news, I don't want to say newspaper articles, again, dating myself here, but blog articles written about how, oh, this is going to be the end of the world for office owners or really anybody who owns commercial real estate. And I certainly hope not. I mean, there's always opportunity for sure. I don't want to see anybody get hammered on the value of their investments, but I'm really optimistic that things won't be as bad as media is telling us or wants us to think that they'll be. And further, I'm optimistic that there will be opportunities in the space, specifically multifamily space. I certainly hope it doesn't come on the backs of folks losing a lot of money. Obviously, I don't see myself getting caught up in that, but I can't predict the future, right? I'm just trying to protect myself and my investments, my investors from those downsides. But I believe that there is always opportunity. The successful investors who built relationships over the years are always asking themselves the classic question of not what if it goes wrong, but what if it goes right? Like, what if things work out better than I think they will? And most of the time in life, they do. Now, sometimes they don't. Sometimes things do go worse. I've been in car accidents, for example. I certainly didn't expect that to happen. But most of the time in our lives, it's not the end of the world. So I think there will be opportunities, and the wise investors are already positioned to see them coming or are currently putting themselves in position to see those opportunities coming along, and they're getting prepared.
Let's do this. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call the final four. What do you think holds most passive investors back from hitting their personal next level, whatever that happens to be?
I think fear holds us back in investing more than we really care to admit. And it's not just fear of investing in a deal, for example, but it's the fear of reaching out to someone and getting on the phone, and the fear of asking what we might think are dumb questions, but in practice are far more often wise questions or questions that the person we're asking had at one time. So I think it's the fear of really putting yourself out there, especially as a passive investor, right? You're busy, you're a high earning professional, you're occupied throughout the day. It's tough to take the time in your evening to schedule a call with an operator to get to know them. And it's kind of, if you're not somebody who's used to being on the phone with others, as many busy professionals really might not be, especially if they're coders or computer science people, engineers, that kind of a thing, stepping out of your comfort zone, I think, can really open up a lot of opportunities, whether it's just straight up investment opportunities, but also learning opportunities, the willingness to, again, ask what you might think is a dumb question, but really in reality is probably a question that someone else had in the past. And there's probably the answer to out there in the ether. You can go find it.
What are you passionate about outside of real estate?
Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I've been training since 2015. I'm a purple belt. I want to be able to train as long as I possibly can and continue to grow and get better. I love it because, first off, my wife there, she doesn't train anymore, but she wasn't my wife at the time. Funny joke. It's a great way to learn to push your own comfort zone. And I've somewhat unintentionally always done that. Prior to training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I did a triathlon. I hate swimming. I'm a horrible swimmer. I could not swim one single lap when I signed up for that triathlon, but I did it. It was just a half mile. It was a sprint triathlon, half mile in a lake. I hated every second of it, but you know what? I did it. I put myself out there, and jiu-jitsu gives me that just constant struggle and getting outside of your comfort zone.
Your favorite book?
I'll say the one that has had the most impact on me, and it's one of the ones that's behind me. And you're probably going to think, if folks are looking at the video, it's this one right here, Rich Dad Poor Dad. It's actually not. It's a little further down the aisle here, Crucial Conversations. This one is top of my list because it, for a few reasons. First off, it teaches you tools to deal with conversations when they get particularly difficult, or as the authors call them, crucial in the context of the book. It's not a super long book, but they really get into tools for talking when the stakes are high, is the tagline of the book. And those are important skills. Your ability to deal with others seriously impacts your success in life no matter what. I wish I had appreciated that earlier than I did. I started learning that in my early 20s, but here we are. And crucial conversations came to me in my life through a mentor when I was at the time in my mid-20s. And it's provided a lot of tools for not only dealing with tough conversations in business situations, but also with personal relationships, with my wife, with family, with other people. And it's one that's on my list to get back to reading again. I'm in the middle of a different book. I don't like just putting books away that I'm reading. So I'm going to finish the current one, reread Crucial Conversations, but highly recommend it, Crucial Conversations.
Your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
I've been a vegetarian again since 2015. 2015 was a big year in my life, unintentionally. But in that vein, I support local animal shelters. And my goal is, outside of personal prosperity, which everybody's investing in real estate for, my goal is to continue to grow our wealth, you know, myself and my wife, so that we can make an even bigger impact in supporting animal shelters.
Taylor, it's been a wonderful conversation. It's fun to get your perspective on the environment, meaning economic environment that's taking place today for us as a whole, and then more specifically inside the apartments and self-storage world. For people who want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect with you, where can they go? What should they do?
Sure. If folks want to speak with me about what we do in business, the deals we're doing, just email me, taylor@ntcapitalgroup.com. I have a free 7-day video course on red flags and passive real estate investing. Bite-sized videos, go through some 7 things that I see go wrong. Go to passiverealestatecourse.com, or I host the Passive Wealth Strategy Show, where we'll teach you to escape the Wall Street casino and build wealth on Main Street by investing in real estate.
That's wonderful. All the links will be below in the show notes for everybody. Taylor, I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.